taking those things and looking at them from a slightly different angle. And I find this book really, really excellent. I wish this had been published when I was first studying tarot. I find it really, really excellent, and one of the better descriptions, because it's very casual, but very to the point as well, both. Thanks. Just stick it here.
Oh, that's great.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate it. And this is just like such a basic text. It's just really, you know, it's one of the oldest books on tarot that you can find. And you notice I have like two different tarot. I have about four or five decks of tarot decks, but I decided just to focus on two different types of cards to sort of give you an idea that there are many ways of drawing them as well, but some principles also stay the same. So you see the postures on the two that we're going to do tonight are quite different. One of them is sitting. They're both looking ahead, but this one sits with his one foot on a ram, and this one has rams on his throne. Right? And then if you look in this book at the picture of the emperor, it's the third posture altogether, where he's looking off to the right, so his left eye is what you see. And he's sitting in a geometric shape, right? Mm. He's sitting with his legs in a cross, and the top of his body makes a sort of a triangle. You see that? So there can be quite different drawings for the same principle. So to think that there's one right one, you might miss a point here. It's true that just as with especially the Tibetan tradition, when you get some of the higher initiations and the higher teachings, mistakes are written into the texts. Do you know that? Did you know that? Purposefully, so that you actually have to receive a teaching in order to understand it. Mm-hmm. It's a protection. And the same with tarot. There are sometimes things put out that aren't exactly how they would be done if you were going to do an exact drawing. Therefore, they're called esoteric teachings, that is hidden. You have to dig a little deeper, and if you have really good questions, eventually you find somebody and you ask them that question, maybe in a bar, you don't even know they know anything about it. You're saying, why is it... you know, and they'll say, if you ask and there's a real sense of interest, maybe you ask two or three times, then they'll go, well, you know, I got something interesting you might like to see, and they'll, you know, take you sometime to this library or something, and show you something that would be more like this kind of thing. This is called the Book of Tokens, and this is a book of meditations for each one of the cards that we're looking at of the major arcana. So there's the first, and this is a picture of Paul Foster Case, in case you ever wondered what he looked like. I wonder what a baby picture of him would look like.
If you go to the website, they've got a picture of also. Yeah, what is the tapes of...
I can't remember that.
What is his partner in that? You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Well, they have pictures of them there.
Oh, neat. Yeah. Thank you, Kathy. And so there's a meditation on Aleph, the fool. And what you would do is read it every day. You'd sit still for a little while, and then you'd read it at least once. And then you would just sit for a while with it, thinking about some of the ideas in it. And you do that for a period of time, and then you go to the next one. Right. And there's a few, you know, footnotes with information. And then the next one is Beth. Remember the house? Beth means house. The magician is in the house. So this is the transcendent spirit in a universal manifestation and in an individual manifestation. Right? That's basically here, right? That's what you got here. So, although many people, I can hear them yowling in the background when I'm saying individual, because this is actually not yet individuated. It doesn't become individuated until here. The next card, we're going to do the Hierophant. Then there is actually a movement toward individuation. But so we are talking about principles here so far. The four principles of mind and matter, right? You see a cross here? One of these days I'll even get a blackboard, won't I? And up here is the magician, and down here is the emperor, who we're going to do tonight, mind. Some people call this time, and this space. And here is, well, that's from when you're looking at it, here is the high priestess, and here is the empress. Space. All the potentiality, the high priestess is the water of all potentiality, and the empress is, which could give birth to this, to this, to this, to this, to this. Is that reasonable? So they're like the potential, and this is like the lightning, here, this moment, the pulling out of, you know, the naming, the scintillating, the lightning flash in the water is, for me, the clearest definition of those two. Well, it doesn't get to all the finenesses, but nothing does. But the image will. If you work with the images, I recommend if you're more interested in following more of the tarot, that you get this book. It's called The Book of Tokens, and I can pass it around so you can look at it.
Thank you.
Very, very helpful and very useful. So when we were talking about let me just go back to a little summary, because you know I like doing a little bit of a summary at the beginning. So the fool is fiery intelligence or scintillating intelligence. Do you remember that? And the magician was the intelligence of transparency. Do you remember that? I don't know if you remember that. So the scintillating intelligence is everywhere. Throughout every cell of your body, whether you believe it or not. In all the garbage dumps, in all the saints, in universes beyond our potential, continuously present. Without the transcendent is always present. That's how they say it in Buddhism. Okay? But then when you're looking, am I making any sense at all?
Yes,
And the intelligence of transparency is when you've got that scintillating intelligence that will, they call it sometimes universal will or scintillating intelligence, clothed in desire. Starting to say something, chocolate, kite, violin, you know what I mean? Or maybe, and the infinite wisdom of that there is this continuous round of desire once it's at this point, and how to take that power of the scintillating wisdom, right, because he's got this wand, and move it into the elements in order to come to a better union with the scintillating intelligence. That is to say, all desire will eventually lead to a transcendent experience, if only by finding out that desire sucks. Don't want to do it that way. Maybe this way. If I decide to stop and tie my shoelaces when I'm jaywalking in rush hour, this is not a good thing to do. There could be better ways to use my desire for my shoelaces to be tied. Is that clear? So some lifetime or other, you will introduce shoes that don't have shoelaces, and they'll be an immediate success, and you'll make billions of dollars, and that desire will then transcend to another one. But the real desire is for the individual to not be separate from totality, and totality to not be separate from the individual. Is at one, they call it. Where all desire is immediately the transcendent. And the transcendent is immediately fulfilling all individuality. Or in Buddhism they call it the end of suffering. No longer subject to dissatisfaction. Does that make sense? So this is like where that process is beginning, where desire begins to house the scintillating intelligence. And so it's Beth, the house. And then we get uniting intelligence. All the possibilities that I talked about before, the water of all possibilities. The attraction of possibilities, the reflections from the water. If this is the lightning, this is the water, right? The attractions, the reflections, the potentials, the possibilities, all possibilities. So, of course, there's this immediate, great kind of drawing between these two. You can see that, can't you? That they're always about to come into union, aren't they? You don't ever quite catch the moment when they come into union, but you get the result because you start doing something different. Mm-hmm. A new birth arises. So this is the high priestess after being impregnated by desire. And giving birth, and giving birth, and giving birth, and giving birth. Continuously. And we tend to give birth to either wisdom or folly. And because those are her two values. And it really actually doesn't matter which it is. We tend to think it should be only wisdom. But if it's folly, that could become wisdom, can't it? And people keep saying to me, so how's your health? I understand you aren't well. What do the tests say? And I say, they tell me I'm normal. And everybody says, oh, that's terrible. And I'm going, well, you know, I'm going, it's not really terrible, because then I know what it's not. When you get a diagnosis that doesn't tell you what it is, at least you know what it's not. Isn't that true? Mm-hmm. And why would that be any different, whereas if you go out and make a total ass of yourself and then you say, okay, I'm not going to do that again. Isn't that wisdom? Mm-hmm. Folly would be if you kept repeating it, wouldn't it? When it didn't work the first 5,982 times, you tried it for the 5,983rd time. That would be folly. Wouldn't it? And the number one cause for folly, of course, is pride. Grasping to conceit, you know? I am worse than, I can't do anything different. I am better than, I don't have to do it the way everybody else does. I could just pretend I didn't make a mistake there and the universe will agree with me. Right? Aren't those the two ways you mostly get caught? Or the third, maybe you prefer the third. Well, everybody does it. I'm equal. Well, everybody does it. Have you ever heard that? Mm-hmm. Coming from your own lips? It's not so much a matter of either of those, because those are trying to maintain a position, which is impossible, isn't it? The only way you can maintain a position if you decide in your own mind that you haven't moved. But every day you've moved, haven't you? You get older, don't you? Have you noticed? Mm-hmm. Looked in the mirror, yeah? With a bald spot right in the back of my head here. Look at this. Who knew? I was going to go bald? Oh, my dear. I got a hair implant right away. Brush my hair back. Oh, it tends to fall forward. Give me some goo. What? Is there nothing more interesting about life than worrying about a bald spot? You know? Or forgetting somebody's name? You know? Or losing your address book? Is there nothing more interesting in life? I mean, that's a matter of pride? Come on, folks, get a life. Don't you think we should? Mm-hmm. What's real here? Am I going to keep on my hair when I've been in the grave for a little while? I doubt it. Although hair and nails, I'm told, continue to grow, probably except for the bald spots. But hair is coming in other places. Maybe I can encourage you to be beautiful. Wisdom or folly? It's not what is happening as a result of your actions that is so much wisdom or folly, but how you learn from it. Isn't that true? So when you perform an action and the empress starts producing the little kidneys, you know, the sweet little ankle biters of that action start popping out of the life itself, the results start coming, and you don't stop and look at them, that's folly. Isn't it? Pretty straightforward, isn't it? You stop and look at them and say, okay, that didn't work. That's wisdom, isn't it? And that's a big mistake we often make, isn't it? That somehow we do something and it's less than what we wanted, and we actually think we've made a mistake. Don't we do that a lot? Mm-hmm. But is it true? I mean, haven't you, if you haven't learned anything, it could be a mistake. Mm-hmm. I know I'm harping on this a bit, but I hope you're paying attention, mm-hmm. or you're going to say to me, okay, Cecily, get on with the next thing. We already know that. So then that takes us to the next one, which is called constituting intelligence. The emperor. So as the magician is Beth, the house, the high priestess is Gimel, the camel, that which is the water carrying vehicle across the desert, the precious burden bearer, and Daleth is the door, the womb, the door from which all the results enter, right? Then we get the window, the emperor, the window. You know, a window is a wind door. You know that, don't you? That's what the word comes from. Did you know that? You've heard me say that before? Yeah, it means wind door. Mm-hmm. And there's a brilliant little saying, a little story that I just feel compelled to tell you tonight in terms of the emperor. And it's like this guy is stumbling around inside this kind of some kind of structure, and he's stumbling around trying to find something that will make sense of it all. It's sort of half dark in there, and he's kind of stumbling around, and he finds a few items, but nothing really is making sense for him. And then he stumbles, and there's really dim light in there, and then he comes, and there's this door. And above the door it says, "Look without." And he's been stumbling for a long time. He finally sees his door. It says, "Look without." He pushes his way out the door, and he's like, wow, lost in the world and trying everything, but still looking for some kind of meaning, some kind of understanding, some kind of trying to get something out there. There must be a clue, something to do out there. And he's stumbling around, and after many eons, he finds himself in front of a door, and it says, "Look within," on the outside, above the door. And he goes back in, and he finds himself, he rushes in, and he finds himself in the same building where he's stumbling around again, and he eventually finds a door. It says, "Look without." He goes out, and then, "Look within." And finally, he's standing in the door, having come one more time to either without or within, who cares? And he's standing there, and he goes, "Ugh." He looks up, and right on the door it says, "Look." That's the emperor. Look. So, now to make that a little more clear to you. The thing about a window is that it's a passage for light and air, isn't it? And it also allows you to see out and to see who's coming, doesn't it? Or what the weather's like out there while you're in here, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. So you notice that the emperor is on a high place or an isolated place in the case of this green card. This is the Golden Dawn Tarot. This is Paul Foster Case's tarot. No, this isn't Paul Foster Case, is it? Who's this?
The Rider
deck. And here's Paul Foster Case, which is a little more accurate to the mystery school. But you notice that he's sitting in a very isolated kind of place. You don't see much around him, right? Yeah, here it's mountains and rocks. Here it's mountains and rocks. And here it's just this green background, kind of. And this is what the emperor is, the result of the passage of light and air into the house desire of the magician. The magician is just house desire, and now you got the movement of light and air moving in it, This is a movement of that same kind of intelligence. It went from scintillating intelligence to transparent intelligence, didn't it? Mm-hmm. So now it's become constituting intelligence. So it's constituting, it's putting together, there's movement in it. Mm-hmm. Is that pretty clear? And it's very true that the window allows outlook, but it also allows inlook. Doesn't it? The wisdom of constituting intelligence is not when the eyes are looking only in one direction, but when the emperor is looking with the left eye, which symbolizes being aware of who it is, what principle is looking inside your own being, looking out, but also looking in. Look without, look within, and look. See who is looking. That makes sense? What we would call awareness from a Buddhist point of view. So that not only do you see the object that you're looking for or the reaction you have to have, but you see what in you is jumping for that. Isn't that interesting? The power of the window is to go both ways. Generally speaking, we spend a lot of time stumbling from one to the other. But to actually stand in the doorway and just look is when the emperor is working to the greatest of the capacity, its capacity in your being. So the Beth card is transparency, and this is now, constituting intelligence is now extended from just transparency to motion, the in or out, right? And light. Isn't that what I was saying about this? And that's what's important. And constituting intelligence has to do with the ability to author, to frame, to compose, doesn't it? We form a constitution, or usually in tarot is defined as paternity. Because it is the father principle of seeing and naming, constituting. Because it is authority, authorship. Author is a beautiful word, isn't it? Authority. The power to name. Isn't it? When you look, isn't that what's necessary for the power to name to come into being? There is a differentiation with looking, which allows the name to arise. So it has to do with laws, order, definitions, authority, authoring, paternity, right? Because it's the male aspect. The empress is maternity, giving birth to all possibilities. Overflowing abundance, incredible abundance. In this book, he does a brilliant little description of the relationship between the emperor and the empress. And what page? I'm starting on 75. And somebody asked him, about the emperor looks so stern and why does he wear armor? And it says, the knights are likely to carry weapons, but the author of the universe doesn't need weapons. He doesn't carry any weapons. The armor is in the words of Milarepa, Tibet's favorite yogi, goodwill and harmlessness his weapons are. In other words, love is disarming. That's the greatest weapon of all, isn't it? And then, well, why does he wear armor? His defense of armor signifies that the sacred things in the divine scheme are protected. No matter how bad you are, you cannot destroy the sacred. So give it up. It's not possible because you are the sacred. The old temples always had guards in the outer precinct to protect the Holy of Holies inside. This was the original function of Mars. The armor corresponds to severity, the fifth center on the Tree of Life, which is the seat of Mars. It is said to be a ring of fire, a ring of protection. What happens if the emperor is surrounded by tanks and cannons? Does he melt them all with love or what? Now, wait a minute. We're not talking about Superman here. We're talking about the ultimate abstract masculine principle. It's very remote, a long way from tanks and bombs. We're talking about archetypes. Our bombs don't bother him. If you ever saw Green Pastures, you'll remember that Gabriel was always for going in and cleaning up the earth. And it was always the patience of God that stopped the archangel from wiping us out. Our beneficent Divine Father is generous and understanding. What's more, he's in love with the Empress. She represents the good in his life. We mentioned last week that he looks at her in the tableau. There is a similar arrangement in the Lover's Key. Because she's a wise psychologist, the Empress pays little attention to him. But she knows he's looking at her. He'd better show his appreciation if he wants to get any dinner. The Logos principle can construct a house complete with plumbing and lighting. He can build the automobile and he can go to the moon. He can also go to hell rapidly. He has a lot of talent. However, he can't fill the house with children and he can't cook worth a damn. Well, of course, present company excluded. However, oh no, if all the ultra-logos type of people had to live together, they wouldn't last long because there'd be so little nurturing. They'd all be experts, right? So you can see why this person needs to be married to somebody full of love and affection. The Logos principle is way out there, very abstract. The Eros principle of the Divine Mother is right here and now, and breakfast will be on the table when you need it. Isn't that a lovely description? And that's true in your own being, isn't it? If your Logos principle gets too far away from the nurturing principle in your being, you get really weird, don't you? And the nurturing principle in your being gets too far away from the logos principle, you never get anything done, do you? And they need to work together, don't they? This is talking about principles in your own being and in the universe. This is how the universe works, knowing and being, inseparable. Form is not separate from emptiness, is not separate from form, is not separate from emptiness. Right? Feeling is not separate from emptiness. Perception is not separate from emptiness. Mental formations. Consciousness is not separate from emptiness. Emptiness means all possibility, no particular thing. Doesn't it? So you can see why I think this book might be quite useful to study tarot. It's got a lot of really interesting ways of putting things that I think is more handy. Do you have any questions, answers, comments, or complaints so far? So you see, if you're only looking within, you don't get it. If you're only looking without, you don't get it. If you stand right in the middle and look, you got it. Questions, answers, comments, or complaints?
It seems to get more confusing when you're in the middle. Me, anyway. Because when I listen, I compare it to what's going on in my life. I see myself in the middle of it. What you're saying.
You're here.
I work 12 hours a day, so you don't have any time to sleep. All you do is you work, you eat, and you sleep. And the sleeping is getting cut into because you want to do a little bit of thinking. But you can't think so much. You're supposed to be working, so you got to be at work. You got to be present at the job, or you'll kill yourself. So I just find it cutting into more. If I want to sleep, if I want to think. Or if I want to sit and meditate, which gives me a better time at work, it gives me a better sleep, but it also tells me that I'm taking time away from something else. One of the two, sleeping or work. Even though I'm getting more out of both, by taking the time, like you say, read this, understand this, stand in the middle and look.
Mm-hmm.
But you won't.
You can't do it for 10 minutes a day? You can't sit and watch your breath for 10 minutes a day?
When I do, everything gets better.
I'm and asking you, can you? 10 minutes?
Yeah, yes, I can.
So but I don't understand what you're saying, because you could do it.
I probably don't understand myself.
Yeah, maybe by talking about it, that's helping you make it more conscious. You feel frustrated?
Yeah, I get frustrated with it. I definitely get frustrated with it.
So, looking directly at that frustration, you could say, well, okay, I'm going to take 10 minutes every day to either sit and think, or sit and watch my breath, or sit and say a prayer I like.
And when I do that...
What? 10 minutes?
When I do the 10 minutes.
Yeah. Have you done that? Have you done that for just 10 minutes every day for a week to see what happens?
Yeah, I've done it.
Okay, for 10 minutes?
Yeah, 10 minutes or 15 minutes.
No, I said 10.
Okay.
Always 10.
No, not 10. No.
Okay, stick to 10.
15 minutes or 20 minutes or half an hour.
No, always stick to 10. Start with 10.
Okay.
And do it for at least a week. And don't miss a day. You can always do 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
But when you start trying to change that, fluctuate that time, it's going to create problems. If you do it 10 minutes one day, 15 another, half an hour the next, none the next, that doesn't work.
Okay.
I'm just telling you from my own experience.
Mm-hmm.
That I used to have two jobs when I would be saving money to go on a retreat, you know. Because I had this teacher, he used to have retreats in these expensive to get to places like Spain. And he had enough money, he'd have enough money to fly there, you couldn't hitchhike, you know. And I wanted to do the retreats, so I would work two jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And then there were classes you were supposed to go to. And then sleep. Somewhere in there, food. So you can see
mm-hmm.
that I have a sense of what
oh
you're
yeah,
saying.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I'm not working in the same intensity you are. You know, a couple of my jobs were real. You could lean against the counter and pretend you're awake with your eyes open, you know. And there was no customers. And you'd already wiped the counter 7 times, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But you understand what I'm saying. Like
no.
to set a smaller but fixed time and just make it what you're doing, then that would help the frustration.
Okay.
Let me know. I'd be interested. I'd like to know if I'm full of shit or if it's actually useful. You know that.
Yes.
Thank you. I'd be interested. I'm just telling you that because I struggled with it myself at one time and I came out for some reason with this idea, okay, less than I can do, but every day.
Mm-hmm.
And that was something happened with that. That was very nice. Number one, I found myself not giving excuses for when I didn't do it, because I was doing it every day, and I had set the time before I started. And then number two, I found that after a week, I wanted to sit for longer than 10 minutes, and I could see how I could.
Mm-hmm.
But if I started by trying to sit for an hour, I would not have done it at all.
Mm-hmm.
So I allowed myself to go from 10 to, okay, you can do 15. I mean, oh, I do 10, I should do an hour. No. Slowly. And your sleep is better, so you don't feel, and you do, you know, people get much nicer at work. It's funny,
mm-hmm.
they take a happy pill or something overnight. I don't know what happens.
Yeah,
you do your practice, they all seem to get nicer. I don't know what they're doing.
No, I go through that too.
Yeah. Like that.
No.
I don't know, that might be useful, you let me know.
Mention the, I should know, the logos, what is that, the logos again?
Logos?
Is that the...
The naming or the conscious?
Or the word.
Yeah, the word.
Okay, yeah, all right.
Consciousness. Naming and being are how they're often translated, the two.
Okay.
Any other? Yes.
Is part of this the process of, like, when you dream there's like this, like a collage, and this, out of all the possibilities of that collage, picking a specific item?
That would be partially to do with that, yeah. And it will become clearer that's that quality that can do that, but not if it's conscious. These are archetypal energies.
Okay. So it's the ability to be able to do that rather than specifically doing that.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's the quality of window.
Okay, got it, okay.
That can look both ways, and so just be the window itself. It's the quality of window, which is neither out nor in, but allows both. Right? Okay.
So you're seeing the individual. It's the ability to see the specific points without any action. You're not doing
naming. Well, he's way up on the heights, isn't he? He's way up on the heights there, you know. But the erosion from the heights, you know, it's not one of the books, I'm not sure which one talks about this too, the erosion from the heights is what makes the garden of the Empress fertile. Don't ever think these are separate principles, because they're not.
Huh?
Yeah. All four of these. They're all aspects of the fool. Although the fool doesn't have aspects.
Well, you want to go that one then?
That's up to you.
Okay.
Did you want to say something about that?
Well, no, I was going to ask you. I mean, I guess I don't understand that.
Yeah, okay, good.
Yeah.
I think the fool, closest we would come, like they talk about it as being breath, but, you know, the closest we would come in our language would be when we use the word spirit, which, you know, doesn't exist. Or something. Or does. Or something. Or is everywhere, or is nowhere, or, you know. You can't talk about spirit in form, can you?
Mm-hmm.
Or function. But we all learned the word somewhere. So we all got an arrow called spirit that we point every once in a while, but you know, when you try to actually...
Is that somehow related to describe a person's spirit like that? I thought he was just spirit or spunky spirit or something like that. Is that any relation to that?
I wonder. There's nothing separate from the fool. The fool is everywhere. But way beyond any kind of knowing, that's why he's such a fool. Doesn't even get into the class he's already in. Can't get out of it, he's already been out. Already out. Okay. Any other? So the card is Aries, Rams, Mars. Well, you got a nice colored card there. Can I borrow it? It's beautiful. Did you color it?
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very strong card, strong health, strong vital energy. It is the vital energy in one way. In another way, it has to do with what they call guna in the Hindu tradition. In the Hindu tradition, sometimes Ratnasambhava is called Guna Ratnasambhava. Does that, have you ever seen that written? And Guna is the three principles of all existence. which is passion. You know, I've heard all kinds of, what did they say here for that? Stability, they say, stability, rigidity and stability. But it can be, sometimes they talk about it as indifference or non-passion. And sattva, the life force. So it's rajas is in the Hindu passion, and tamas is the sort of like a Saturn kind of energy, not unmoving energy. And then sattva is the life force itself. And you know also that Ratnasambhava is the Dhyani Buddha of the fully awakened aggregate of feeling. And what do you know about feeling? What kind of feelings do you have? Mental feelings. Like? Dislike. Passion? Freezing on? And in indifference, it's called, but neutrality, which is just life itself, the very just being in the present without making any choices. So for the geometry of the emperor is talking about, in alchemy, they take those three things, ragas, gunas, and sattva, and they make it into the three main elements that you use to transform lead to gold in your own being: mercury, sulfur, and salt. So when he is sitting in this, the emperor is drawn so the top of his body forms a triangle and his limbs form an equal arm cross. A triangle surmounting a cross is the sign of sulfur, one of the three main materials used in alchemy. These represent qualities, which is exactly what the word is in the Hindu tradition. Gunas means qualities. And qualities are what feelings are, right? Like and dislike, they're the qualities we feel in relation to our environment, don't we? And that's how we perform the alchemy of our lives, isn't it? By like and dislike, or neutral. And that is how we learn or discern or move, isn't it? So how you turn lead to gold is turning around and examining the like, dislike, and neutral within your own being. That's alchemy. And that's what he is doing. Look without, look within. Look. Look at like and dislike. Look at the living quality. Know them for what they are. Which of course then becomes a mystery. Which then is the path to recognizing the fool. So that's another aspect of this that I think is particularly interesting. The whole bringing up of those attributes, which they don't talk about here. They say these represent qualities. They correspond to the three gunas of Hindu philosophy. Sulfur is rajas, the passionate, fiery desire nature. Salt is tamas, the ultimate in rigidity and stability, and mercury is sattva, the harmonizing quality that supplies meaning. So the sulfur is the passionate quality and its color is red, because that's actually life. The power of life is desire. self or desire, the fire. And he is living, naming, the living window, the living ability to focus on and see in and out at the same time. When he is actually the wisdom, okay, let me do, was there something else I wanted to do? He has the power to name and experience. And his, what he's holding is like the Ankh, you know, the symbol of life in Egypt, is like the Ankh. And sometimes if you do initiations, sometimes you see him looking through this circle with his left eye. His left eye. Because with the eye of wisdom, the ability to see inner and outer, which is why you see his left eye only, looking at life, at the quality of life, his passion is to see with the left eye, with wisdom. Am I getting too complex for you? So he, what he does, he's looking through the eye of the wisdom of what is present seen in the moment, which destroys the errors of the past. So he can be looking at what might seem to you or I the same thing, but he will come up with a slightly different name, even if it's the same name to our ears. Every experience is new to the emperor, a new name. And whenever there is a new experience, it destroys all your past experiences. So he is the eye of wisdom. What?
You said it again.
Every experience is new, regardless of how many times you think you've repeated it. And when you go through an experience, and it is through the, if you're open to the eye of the emperor, it destroys every other experience, and this is new in this time, even if you come up with the same answer. Every moment is transcendent. His naming brings new revelation. Neat, eh? So this is what constituting intelligence is. It continues, it combines the imaginative generation of the Empress, because the Empress is imaginatively generating all the time, isn't she? She's always giving birth to some new thing. From any impulse that hits her, from the desire-clad will hitting the window of all, the water of all possibility, then this womb starts producing, right? So then constituting intelligence, this guy combines the imaginative generation of the Empress with the destruction of structure of error. Any structure that is the past moment is an error, because the present moment is always new. And if you think you already know something, you're negating the miracle and mystery of your own life. You cause yourself poverty. No matter how rich you are, then you start being afraid of being poor or losing. Does that make sense? But you yourself are robbing yourself of your own power when you do that. Because this is a lover of the new. And this is what continuously brings you to the moment you want, this one. So it's called He Who Sets in Order. Because the order is, throw out everything you already knew and learn something in the moment. This moment. Don't come with your pride. Come with your, oh, is it? How we doing? Let me quit there for now. Questions, answers, comments, or complaints? About it. And if you want, I can just read that, because his throne is the cube of space, or the seat of wisdom, or whatever, or the map of the universe, or whatever you want to call it. And what you're doing when you study look without, look within and look, is that you're understanding the universe in a grain of sand, and heaven in a, you know, it, you know, hold eternity in the palm of your hand, and you know that Blake poem? Mm-hmm. Heaven in a wildflower.
Oh, the universe in a grain of sand.
See the universe in a grain of sand.
What's the symbolism of the ram on the cube?
Aries.
Okay.
I mean, this is the beginning of the zodiacal signs. The ones before him are not zodiac. Now the zodiac starts, and various cards have a zodiac attribute. Our teachers tell us that the gem inside us is very real, that we all have a gem inside us, and it's very real. The way you identify to yourself is vitally important. If somebody asks me, who are you, I might reach into my wallet and read all my things, give the thumbprint and everything, which is an identification convenient for the government. But if you don't get beyond this, or even worse, if you identify with what your parents and the local minister think of you, it's hard luck, that's all. It's like breaking your leg, only worse. And before that, he talks about the nature of substance of the physical is subtle. It's not like a brick. It can assume any characteristic. So if you want a certain feeling that comes from a certain quality, you can create it. The gunas, the qualities of mercury, sulfur, and salt, will respond to you. Respond to you. It's important to remember that everything is fluid. To get the idea of the way the emperor's vision works, think in terms of the completely fluidic response of substance to what he has in mind. Everything that exists is open to change, flow. It is possible to speed up or slow down that flow. It is possible to change material. Material is changing all the time. Different types of energy cause that change to slow up or speed, or slow down, or speed, slow up or speed down, or something. Depending on how you use your mind, that's quite possible. Insofar, so the high priestess is substance represented by the high priestess in the tarot contains everything in solution. Insofar as we set up a positive pull in ourselves, we begin to pull things out of a great ocean of possibilities. When you open to the present moment, like we were talking about earlier, we begin to pull things out of the great ocean of possibilities. Everything necessary to bring our constitution into expression will come by way of accretion without any effort on our part. As it says in one of the statements in the pattern on the trestle board, from the exhaustless riches of limitless substance, I draw all things needful, both spiritual and material. This is the true magic of life and mind. If we use the philosophy of the tarot, it will work for us. We mustn't even for a moment think that we have reality figured out. By definition, it's the thing that nobody knows anything about. It's there, but it defies description. So if we take a pragmatic approach to spiritual matters and stick to what we know is useful, we can work with that. And then somebody says, are you talking about holding an image in your mind of something you want to materialize? Does that remind you of that movie, The Secret? You seen that movie?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that what it's about, basically?
Mm-hmm.
You can get whatever you wish for.
Mm-hmm.
Getting something you've imagined isn't so great.
Mm-hmm.
What's more advanced in this kind of magic is to realize our own place in the scheme of things. To wake up our own specific reason for being here in this place at this time. Even if we don't know how the law works, it works anyway. It's always working, always supporting us. Even if we kick and scream and don't like what we see, still it supports us. And someone says, the average person can't bear to admit that there's anything he can't understand. He just won't make that leap. I guess this is the reason that millions of people cling to exoteric religious dogmas, because it's comforting. It's nice to have 10,000 or a million people all telling you the same thing. It's reassuring even if it's baloney. But this has never been the path of the thinker. As Lao Tzu said, if you just use your eyes and ears and what you've been given, by observation, you will come to valid conclusions about what's going on. This doesn't mean you'll know all the answers in the universe, but you'll know what's happening in your life. explain yourself to yourself is just about the most difficult thing there is to do. But that's why we're here. 99% of it is finding out what you aren't. You know what I said earlier? One of the strongest steps in discriminating between what you are and what you are not is to try to constitute yourself consciously as to what you are. That is to be honest, to be clear, conscious, naming what is this present experience. Until you do that, you can't do anything. This immediately eliminates a lot of what you are not. Then if it doesn't work out quite right, well, do it again. But at least you get to where you can say, that's not me. If you want to be that George, you go right ahead. That's your life. This is my temple, my garden, and this is where I'm the boss. We're talking about your inner life, what really matters as far as yourself is concerned. You are always able to cherish a certain part of yourself that you consider sacred, but you keep it strictly private. And he talks about the fact that every one of us has a gem within us. We are a gem. And until we start looking at what we are rather than what we are not, we're subject to fear. And when we start to look at what we are, we become powerful in love, which is the power of the naming, the power of love. You can't name something until you love it. Isn't that lovely? So I say, the emperor within you can see anything. From where he sits, he's got the best view there is. The cube of space, which is to say the whole universe, is his throne. Since there wouldn't be any universe without the feminine principle, the high priestess is also seated on a cube. You see her picture? She's seated on a cube, too. That's why the alchemists say it represents the tamas guna. You know, the principle, the Hindu principles of the three qualities. The cube of space is a convenient arrangement for studying complex relationships. That's what the cube of space is. It is constituted from the Hebrew alphabet. Each letter has an astrological connotation, a color, and of course a tarot key. The palace of holiness where God dwells is in the center. The surrounding letters are, you might say, the ornaments of God. The three mother letters go out like an explosion from the center. These supply the qualities that characterize the top of the tree. The line that connects above to below corresponds to Aleph and Kether. The north-south coordinate is Shin and Chokhmah, and Mem corresponds to Binah and the east-west coordinate. One planet is located in the center of the cube of space. The six faces are also planets. The 12 edges stand for the tribes of Israel and the zodiacal signs. Based on a conjunction of two faces, each tribe has a certain character that is precisely due to an admixture of related qualities. Secondary attributes come in from the lines that join the edges at the corners, but the main qualities come from the juncture of the faces. That is the cube of space. You understand what I'm saying? It's way too complex.
Yes.
It is very worthy of a study, but I think first we should look more at all of the tarot, and then we could go to the alphabet. Every alphabet is actually magic. It comes from magic. Did you know that? Mm-hmm. Aleph is the ox that pulls that walks through in spring. Aleph is the fool, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
That has the sharp hooves that dig into the earth to get the roots of the new grass before it's really come up yet, and eats and keeps walking and shits and seeds that he's picked up from that were around the roots are dropped into new territory. So where Aleph passes, new growth is coming all the time. You never see Aleph, he's invisible, but you see the results from new growth. Open sound. Beth, closed. And each of the letters of the alphabet are a mystical, a mandala too. Aleph is an ox's head, A, but it's been put on one side. Beth is a pen? Thank you. Can I have a pen? Beth is the high priestess, right? The high priestess, the water of all possibility. Above and below, and the hidden possibility. Whatever from above comes into the water could possibly be the hidden part. So this is Beth, half seen, half unseen. She has the veil behind her, right? All possibility of the meeting of the above and below, but not yet seen. Does that make sense to you? All of our letters are actually magical incantations, and there are actually ways of saying them. Mantra is a tool of the mind. Mantra is a power, and we can change the energy of our lives and of other lives and of form through the use of mantra. But not if we're caught in fear. So, is that enough for tonight?
Okay, can I ask a question?
Yep.
In the first thing there on the Trustable, I come across another stuff in the mysteries, and such as the idea of substance. What is meant by, I think I like, what is substance? Is it something, is it kind of an energy or a fluidity that you draw on it and you work with it, or?
Substance is the same thing as the water of all possibility. Basically, it's what will manifest. But it's a flowing energy.
If you mold it, though, too,
it gets molded, and then it carries on flowing afterward. Yeah, there are many ways to mold it.
Because you're talking about you use it for what's the first thing, trust board? What does it say? I draw a trust board to all things spiritual and all things.
I know where the trestle board is in this book, or I used to.
Maybe it's at the back, but just the way you just read there, he talks that you to draw from the trestle board.
But that was the fourth one I read. It was the fourth thing of the trestle board. Probably it's in the index where the trestle board is A. Is there an index that tells you that in this book?
No, it says right here. From the exhaustible riches of limitless substance, I draw all things needful for both spiritual and material.
Yeah.
And that's, I think that's the first, one of the first statements, one of the first few.
Is it the first?
I think it's one of the first ones. Yeah.
Four or five anyway, but yeah. Blah, who knows, it's been so long since I...
So it means how I read that is if you work with that, if you want something to manifest in your life, something that's materially,
That's true, but the question is, are you sitting like the emperor and looking with the eye of wisdom? Because sometimes the asking is not necessarily what you think it is. The eye that you think is asking might not be the eye that is asking. You gotta be asking by going look without, or I look within, or by look and be aware not only of who is asking, but what is being asked for. And that's the problem, is that so often we don't see the levels of the I that is asking. Sometimes I have asked for something with the full hope that I wouldn't get it, so I could be convinced of what a total asshole I was. Have you ever done anything like that? And when it didn't come through, I thought, oh, well, I didn't deserve it anyway. But some part of me was secretly satisfied, because then I could go back to my idiot ways and didn't have to make an effort, you know. Mm-hmm. For myself, I'm just talking from my experience. Mm-hmm. So it depends on who's asking. And so that means what position the emperor is in that. You know, is it the emperor looking through the left eye? You know, are you looking with wisdom? Are you seeing look within with a look without and look? Which is why I started more or less with that story. Look within, look without, look. A window goes both ways. Constituting intelligence, both sides have an effect on the naming. Is that useful?
And work for that work. Work for that, okay.
Thank you. Good question.
Yeah, thank you.
So, I don't know if this sort of ties in, but with that movie, The Secret, when I was watching that, it's how it's presented is so simplistic. It's like, you know, you can have whatever you want and you just name it and it's going to be...
And then that little throw-in line there, don't worry about whether we're going to run out. There's more than enough in the universe for everybody.
Yeah, yeah. But, yeah, like, we're missing... I mean, it just...
Yeah, there's something missing there. Exactly.
And so, yeah, I'm not so excited about the...
Well, my brother was telling me, and he was telling me about watching it with somebody, and I said, yeah, I've had quite a few, because it's making the rounds in Didsbury at the moment, quite a few people talk to me about, what do you think of that movie? And I said, you know, and you know me, I just get dogmatic about it. I say, well, it's okay if you like materialism.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what I mean. You notice that everybody in there is talking about what a big house they have at the end.
Yeah.
And how they've got everything they wanted, and they didn't even know they wanted it until they read their plans for 20 years ago about what they wanted, and
yeah,
then they found out they're living in it today. And, you know,
mm-hmm.
like it's all about material and how many hours they must spend on the road traveling to tell people that so that they can make the money to keep the house.
Yeah.
It's kind of like pyramid sales.
Yeah.
In a way,
yeah.
Spiritual pyramid sales. So I'm mouthing out to my brother that I'm like, you know, I don't want anybody to ask me, because I'm starting to sound like I'm ranting when I'm saying this.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, yeah, some people were asking me and wanted me to see the movie. So finally I sat down and saw the movie with them. And then they were asking me what I thought of it. He said, so I had the remote.
You turned it off?
No. He went back and found parts that he liked, because there's a lot of it that you like in the presentation, the first stages. And he would play a certain amount of it, and he'd turn it off, and he'd say, yeah, that's really good, isn't it? And they'd talk about that, and then he'd go, see, he has much more patience than me. and then we'd go a little further with it, he'd say, and then I'd say, yeah, that's really good, isn't it? Because you can see how that and that and that, and he'd start bringing out the ideals, too. And then they'd say, oh, yeah, and then he'd go a little further where it turned into, you too can have whatever you want, and don't worry about, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd say, well, what about that part? Because there was a pause between each part.
Mm.
So you can actually hear the sales pitch separate from the wind-up. And he said after about the third time going through different parts, third doing that with different parts, and saying, what do you think of that part? One of the people took the remote from him and said, okay, you made your point, wound it up and took it back. So he's way smarter than me and that kind of stuff. I just go mouthing off, you know. But he's like, well, let's look at it. Well, let's look at it. This is good. This is good. Well, what about this, though? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Why jump to this conclusion and then get caught in, you know? Because there were a lot of things in that movie that are actually based on wisdom of one's own being, you know? But then where it's wound into at the end is like, yeah. What?
Mm-hmm.
What?
That's the whole point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
As if you want to pay more taxes. It's called The Secret, and it's really, really slickly put together, and you know, very, very good photography, and pretty good, you know. It's a DVD, and I don't know where people get it, but
okay.
It's around everywhere.
I've got a copy, but I've got it lent over in Melbourne.
Yeah,
I'll bring
yeah,
it when I get back.
I'm sure you know somebody who's trying to get you to watch it. Well, I'm sure you will hear from somebody that you should watch it, and you should, because you need to know yourself. You know, I could, you know, how cynical I am. Maybe I'm missing a good thing, and maybe it's just right for you. In which case, don't forget to bring it to Disbury and show it to me, and tell me why. Like my brother did. Now you see, Cecily, look at that. But a lot of the same themes, eh?
Mm-hmm.
But that whole thing about the eye of wisdom is very specific.
Yeah, and they miss that whole...
It's not talked about. They mention it, but they gloss over it. It's mentioned twice, as far as I could remember, in the movie. But it's sort of just glossed over. It's sort of like mentioned so that we've covered it, but it isn't really...
Because it won't sell.
I'm not going to be that cynical to say that, even though I might, part of me, believe that. I'm guarding myself when I teach.
I can speak.
Any other questions, answers, comments, or complaints? Was that all right for you? You feel you got a little taste of the emperor?
Yep.
Okay. So who wants to do some kind of blessing at the end of this class? Because somebody else should do it. Some Western-type blessing. Joan, okay.
Oh.
Go ahead. It's not boring, is it?
Oh, no. Do you have time for just a couple minutes?
Yep.
I'm just going to check
that.
Yep.
Yep, yep.
This is this.
Right now?
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
Mercy, mercy.